Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Join us on a journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 238, The Upper Limit. Read by Mitchell Tu. Opening and closing theme by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, the only reason you are conscious might be so another can experience your world.
What happened?
Julian moaned, rolling onto his back. Only the annoying hum of equipment greeted his ears, and the smell of off-gassing new plastic filled his lungs. Julian blinked his eyes open and found himself staring at a beige plastic ceiling with a vent running along its center and soft valence lights along the edges. It reminded him of something you might expect to see in an airliner. He tried to turn his head, but the movement made the room swim around him. Sick and disoriented, he closed his eyes again until the spinning sensation began to subside. Feeling better after a few minutes, Julian struggled to prop himself up on his elbows, then sat up and looked around the small compartment. Consoles filled with blinking lights and small display screens lined the wall opposite the med bench he found himself lying on. He pulled several tubes out of his forearm, where someone had inserted them through catheters, and carefully swung his legs off the bench onto the floor. He didn't remember being hooked up. In fact, he didn't remember much beyond a vague notion that he had been at some type of meeting. A large flat screen, embedded on what he decided to call the front wall, displayed a diffuse glow which grew denser and bluer toward the center of the screen. He watched with fascination as the nebulous image slowly changed. Deciding it was not going to provide any clues as to the nature of his current situation, he turned away to examine the rear wall. It consisted of a bulkhead with a ladder running up to a hatch in the ceiling. Julian stumbled to his feet and almost fell over when he tried to walk. There was something wrong with the gravity. It was as if he was in a gondola on some demented amusement park ride, which was trying to pin him to the floor. He used handholds he discovered on the walls to help steady himself as he worked his way over to the ladder. Once there, he took a moment to recover. However, closing his eyes only made things worse, which reinforced the idea the room was being spun. Julian forced himself up the ladder and tried to undo the hatch. Red lights placed around its edge gave a warning flash, and the hatch refused to budge. He climbed down, worked his way back to the med bench, and sat to think.
Hello?
He eventually tried, experimentally.
What's going on?
But only the whine of humming machinery answered. Without warning, the pitch began to change. Arriving soon at the destination, an artificial voice announced.
What destination? Where am I?
Julian demanded. Please, be patient, Dr. Harari. He twisted around to see where the voice was coming from. This time, it was human and emanating from a speaker in the ceiling.
You're not in any danger, it advised.
Who are you? I insist that you let me go.
In good time, Doctor. Right now, that's not possible.
Why?
Because in an hour, you are going into orbit around a brown dwarf star called WISE-1639, 16 light-years from Earth. There is only vacuum outside. There's no place to go.
Is this some kind of sick trick? Julian demanded. He stood and made his way over to the row of consoles and searched the displays for information. But they were filled with graphs and numbers which didn't make sense to him. You have no right to hold me here, against my will, in some laughably cheap spaceship mock-up, Julian complained. Look, these displays are just showing garbage. If you wanted me to be convinced, you should have hired better special effects artists. Now, get me out of this second-rate fake, or I'll call the police. Julian searched his pocket for his cell phone, but found nothing. You took my phone?
It would be useless anyway, the voice pointed out. The nearest cell tower is 16 light-years away. I'm talking to you through a quantum link. It's the only way to communicate in real time over such a great distance.
More lies? Julian accused. This is obviously not real.
But reality is the whole point. The voice, which seemed strangely familiar, calmly replied. But at the moment, he couldn't quite place where he had heard it before.
What was the last thing you remember, Doctor?
It asked. Julian struggled to remember.
I was at some type of meeting. It's hard. Give me a minute. My memory is slowly coming back. Wait, I remember. I was there to evaluate a funding proposal for some stupid so-called proof that the world is a simulation. I think I got back to my hotel room after the meeting, then I found myself here.
You drugged me and abducted me, didn't you? The speaker crackled, then went silent. Are you still there? Julian demanded.
Yes, this is the first time quantum communications has been used over such a great distance. The technology is relatively new, but simultaneity is critical to this. I guess you would call it an experiment.
Experiment? You've kidnapped me and are forcing me to participate in some pseudo-scientific prank that's going to prove nothing? Julian complained.
It will prove I am right, Dr. Harari.
Wait, I know your voice. Oh no, it can't be. You're Ulla Larson, the crazy pseudoscientist. I was reviewing your funding request. What do you want?
Only for you to see the truth.
What, that we're living in a simulation? That's just bunk. You people are crazy and dangerous because you have followers who actually believe your fantasies. Who knows how people will behave if you convince them the world isn't real? It would be disastrous. I refuse to be part of it.
That's a harsh assessment, Dr. Harari. But you have the respect of the mainstream scientific community. One word from you and my ideas will be taken seriously. So it's critical that you come to accept the truth.
Kidnapping and extortion. Is that how you find the truth?
Oh, Julian, your Cartesian mindset won't even allow you to entertain the question about reality.
That's because your arguments can't be proven scientifically, Julian growled. You always fall back on the supposed fact that we cannot know we are not in a simulation. It's circular nonsense. Objects are made of fundamental particles. We've known that since the Greeks. In a simulation, they would have to be made up of bits. They would just be data. They wouldn't be real. Turn off the power and everything would disappear. We've already been through this argument and it's pointless. Now, let me out of this stage set before I press charges.
The bits are real to the people in the simulation, Ulla countered. They're structures made of information, created by a physical computer in an outside reality. Hasn't Wheeler and other physicists argued for an informational universe? So what makes this different?
I've had enough, Julian grumbled and started banging on the walls. Help, let me out. I'm being held here against my will. He stopped and listened, then banged until his knuckles started aching.
It's empty space on the other side, and there is no one around to hear you, Ulla pointed out.
The voice was now coming from the view screen at the end of the capsule. Julian twisted around and saw that the amorphous glowing cloud had been replaced by an image of Ulla Larson, dressed in a conservative gray business suit. Julian thought she looked like the cat that had just swallowed the canary. Partially blocked by her head, on the wall behind, Julian could just make out the well-known blue swoosh of a space industry company. He hadn't liked the woman the first time he had met her, and the smug expression she was wearing only served to confirm that impression. "I see you're still playing logic games, Miss Larson," Julian groused. "I'm convinced this is a real mock-up, but a genuine space-capable ship in transit? Really? Do you expect me to be that gullible? What's your goal? Convince the stodgy old guy that he's in a spaceship, then reveal it's just a simulation? Are you recording this to undermine my credibility, then use the video as blackmail to force me into public acceptance of your insane ideas?" Ula just smiled. "I found a patron." She moved her head to the side so Julian could see the logo on the wall behind her, just in case he hadn't noticed it. "You're on a real spaceship, Julian, courtesy of my new patron. And you, willing or not, are going to help me prove the simulation hypothesis." "You're delusional. There is no way to prove it. That's why I dismissed your funding application. If you'd really shot me into space, and I honestly doubt that, on one of that billionaire's machines," Julian jabbed an angry finger at the logo behind Ula. "The only thing it will prove is that you are insane." Although, as he said it, Julian could feel his confidence begin to slip. "You are going to sit there and listen this time," Ula commanded. "You dismissed my ideas before you even let me explain how I intended to prove them. Now, you've nowhere to rush off to, and we've got time before your ship arrives at its destination." Realizing the only way forward was to play along until he thought of a way out of the predicament, Julian sat back down on the edge of the med bed. "Okay, I'm listening." Ula took a deep breath to compose her thoughts, then jumped in. "Think about computer games, Julian. They are complete realities within our reality. The game's universe follows its own rules. Characters might be able to jump over buildings or have telescopic vision or not. In the context of the game, anything goes, as long as it follows the coded-in rules, and those rules could be anything the programmers want. The only limitation of such an artificial world is the processing speed of the hardware running it, and that will only be visible as a seemingly unrelated artifact when an action comes up against the upper processing limit of the hardware creating the world. And that limit will be absolute." She paused to let her words sink in, and watched Julian impatiently squirm. When he said nothing, she continued. "I could go into this in depth, but at this point I just want you to understand the overall logic. If the world around us is a simulation, then we should find some artifact caused by the limitations of the hardware supporting it. For example, it could have been speed. There could have been a universal speed limit for travel through space in our simulation. Thankfully, that is not the case. Otherwise, we couldn't have sent you to WISE 1639 in a few days." "But is there such an artifact?" "Yes, it's resolution. Things close to us have incredible detail, but things far away are vague until we get close enough to scrutinize them. Think about what that suggests. Point of view matters because the underlying system generating our reality is ultimately limited. To compensate, it only renders what is needed in high detail when an area of space is observed by a conscious actor." "An interesting mental exercise," Julian conceded. "But it's still unprovable." "Up to now," Ula added, and leaned in closer to the camera. "It's obvious you're only humoring me, but consider this. Despite all the worlds we have visited, we have yet to discover intelligent life. It appears we are alone in the universe, Dr. Harari, and there is a very good reason for that. The outside system which generates our simulation does not have the capacity to render detail for more than one planet of sentient beings."
"And that's it. That's your so-called proof," Julian scoffed.
Yes, and you are going to help prove it. There is a planet orbiting WISE-1639. Its existence has only been inferred by a wobble in the star's rotation, so it's never been directly imaged and therefore has never been rendered in full detail by the underlying system.
So you believe it will be an amorphous blob when someone sees it, Julian said. Yet according to your theory, as soon as it's observed, it will be rendered in full detail. So how does that prove your ideas?
The underlying system will need to make a choice.
That doesn't make sense. What choice?
I haven't been entirely honest with you, Dr. Harari. This is hard to explain.
Julian felt like charging the screen and beating on it, but knew that would be pointless. For the first time in his career, he felt helpless.
You are both there and here, she explained.
That's not possible, Julian objected. I can't be in two places at once.
You can, and are,
Ula said.
We're using telepresence to project your consciousness into that spacecraft.
Julian laughed. I knew it. This is an illusion.
No, it is a real spacecraft, which is physically approaching the WISE-1639 system. And your consciousness is there in a robot. So, for all intents and purposes, you are there, but your organic body is also here, currently unconscious. Once the ship lands, we are going to wake you up. You will only be able to perceive one point of view. You will have reached the upper limit, and the underlying system will have to decide which point of view it will support in full resolution. The other, as you've said, will be an amorphous blob.
Julian was about to object when he was suddenly pushed back against the wall by an unseen force. Warnings began flashing in the view screen, advising him to lay down and strap in. He felt the capsule lurch and banged his head as he began to buckle up. The wall panels rattled so hard he feared the capsule would start to disintegrate. "What's going on?" he demanded, grabbing the edges of the med bench so hard the metal felt like it was cutting into his hands. Until he remembered they really weren't his hands.
Relax, Julian. It's just the landing sequence, Ula explained.
A few minutes later, Julian felt a jolt, and everything went silent. He unsnapped his restraints and stood up, noticing the lights around the airlock had turned green. What am I supposed to do? He asked.
Open the airlock and look out. It's that simple,
Ula encouraged. He shrugged and climbed up the ladder to the hatch. This time it swung back and allowed him to exit. He pushed his head through and the world around him froze. Itsuki removed the transmitters from the ports grafted to the skin behind his ears, then rubbed his forehead. He still got headaches from long sessions. He watched Yasmin in the recliner next to him open her eyes, squint, then unplug. It always took a few minutes to reorient, but this time it was taking longer. He hadn't been expecting his character's hate and anger to linger so long in his mind. He waited a few more minutes for the feelings to fade before daring to speak.
"That's not how I thought it would work out," he said. "We need something that can't be tested so easily. Let's try again and make the hardware artifact, fixed speed for light. It's less obvious. I doubt they'll figure it out so fast."
Yasmin nodded.
"Agreed, but we're switching characters. I want to piggyback on Dr. Harari next time."
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To get other great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com, where you'll find Quantum Kickflip,
Join six Edmonton comedians as they play Slug Blaster, a sci-fi tabletop role-playing game developed in Alberta. On this episode of Makeshift Stories, we'd like to tell you about what's new with our friends at TELUS Story Hive. Calling on all new and emerging creators in BC and Alberta. TELUS Story Hive's All Access Documentary Edition is funding 40 creators with $20,000 each in production funding, mentorship, training, and distribution on TELUS Optic TV. Pitch any documentary idea that you're passionate about, and you could be in the running to join the Story Hive community. Apply by May 30th at storyhive.com/apply. This episode of Makeshift Stories is also brought to you by Alberta Blue Cross. Alberta Blue Cross understands that running a small business is tough, and they understand business owners in Alberta are busy. Let Alberta Blue Cross give you peace of mind with a group benefit plan. They offer health, dental, life, and disability coverage for your employees. Alberta Blue Cross group benefit plans are easy to manage, anywhere, anytime, and on any device, making it easy for you and your employees to access. To learn more and explore your options, head to ab.bluecross.ca. Makeshift Stories is released around the beginning and middle of the month. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. Audio production by Spatialized Audio. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by getting your friends to subscribe or follow wherever they listen to audio. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivative License, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.